Kamada Akona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everybody. This is Yusada Kono Kamada. I welcome you to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. Pyele Yen is with us tonight, as always, and we are ready to get going on a fantastic session. So can I ask each of you to take a nice deep breath, call yourself forward, and we will clear the space. And I will also say that I'm going to do another little guided meditation afterwards. So when I finish the clearing, just stay there with me, okay? Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zakiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one shaft to surround each of us who listen to this program. And I ask that these tubes of light be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. Pyele Yen and I place ourselves in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. All right. Take a nice deep breath for me. Tonight we're going to do a little surface work. We have the use through dispensation of the violet flame. And each of us on a daily basis can be using that to transmute discordant energies, and I would highly recommend that we all do that. It's used in conjunction with the ray work, which we've been talking about over the last few weeks. Tonight we aren't going to do ray work, but we're going to focus on the violet flame. So I'm going to ask each of you internally place yourself in service to humanity and to the planet at this time. And ask to be used as a vessel for spirit to move through you as needed for the highest good of all concerned. I'm going to ask each of us right now to just bring your attention to the water on the planet. Whether your attention goes to an ocean or a river or a lake or the water that comes out of your tap, it does not matter. Bring your attention to the water. And let's ask that we be used as a vessel to transmute any discordant energies that are attached to the water of the planet at this time. Feel inside for any subtle shifting, any images that may come. Your focus is in your heart. Let's hold that. Take a few nice deep breaths as you visualize this violet flame moving through all the water the way that you see it. And now bring your awareness to that violet flame, turning to a beautiful, sparkling, golden white light as all of that discordant energy is shifted back into its perfect divine nature. And allow your awareness just to rest on that perfection for a few more deep breaths. Excellent. Now we're going to move our awareness to the air. Wherever you feel called to be in the air. From your heart, place yourself in service. We'll call in the violet flame to transmute any discordant energies that are attached to the air. A few deep breaths. And again, let's watch as it turns to its perfected state, that beautiful white light. Allow that to fill your heart as you look at the air that is perfectly clear. And take three more deep breaths. And now we move to the land. Where do you find yourself? Are you in the mountains? Are you in the desert? Are you in the city? Wherever you find yourself, place yourself in service there and call in the violet flame. Let's watch the land be healed together. Three deep breaths. And again, as the violet flame turns to crystal white light, fill your heart, be in that space, look at the land in its perfected state, and be with that for three more breaths. And now we're going to move to humanity as a whole. However your awareness perceives humanity, let's put ourselves in service to humanity Let's remember that what we're seeing in the air and the water and the land is an outpicturing of the discordance that's sitting within humanity itself. And when humanity is cleared, everything else has to be cleared. So place yourself in service to humanity at this time. Call in the violet flame. And we ask that the collective discordance be cleared at this time, in whichever way is for everyone's highest good. 3 deep breaths. And now wherever you are looking at humanity, I want you to go down in and really see the people. And as you're looking at the people, wherever you happen to be, I want you to sit with this thought. Look at each person, and as you look at them, I want you to think to yourself, you are going to awaken. You are going to awaken. And you, and you, and you. And it is inevitable that all will awaken. All will come back to their senses in the truest form. And we will function from the unified field, which is singular, with no false notion of separation. It is destined. It already has happened. And we get to watch it happen, which is the most perfect gift of all. So now, in your own awareness, as you see the whole planet shift from violet flame into that crystalline white light, I want you to hold that in your awareness, that all will awaken, and let it fill your heart and give you a sense of excitement. Beautiful days are ahead. Regardless of what they look like now, amazing days are ahead. And so let's hold that for 3 more breaths. So now, everyone should be in a really lovely space. And I'm going to ask you now to just slowly bring your attention back to the space that you're in, wherever you may be. That was really gorgeous, yeah? You want to say anything?
Well, since we meditated earlier... what I thought was interesting was as soon as you started to say the protection, I could feel the energies come in. So that was pretty amazing. And for me, I just went up and out. Totally. And I could hear, like I could still hear everything that was going on, but it was just like I was just out there. And then every time you said, no, take three deep breaths, then I would just automatically do it. So it was like... physically, I was still here, but otherwise I was gone.
It's beautiful, beautiful. You know, and I would encourage everybody to, where would we have people send comments? You could go to the Facebook page and comment, right? People can comment just
absolutely.
On the Facebook page. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So at Facebook and then the Shambhala Center. But I would love to hear people's comments about that meditation and what they experienced. It was powerful. I mean, just beautiful. And I always love to, normally, you know, we do this kind of in groups and I go around the room and allow people to kind of give their experience. And it's always so cool because you'll find that people have very similar experiences and there's like overlap there, but yet they, everyone, you remember that you're individuated but never separated. So we're all interconnected and we can have this, the same experience, but yet because of your individuation and the way you are of service is going to be unique to you. So, you know, you may have found yourself, you know, on a mountain in Tibet or something, whereas someone else maybe was in the heart of New York City, right, when we were looking at the land. I mean, but yet the experience may have been the same thing. So, yeah, I would encourage anyone to share with us because it's just, it's a gift for me to be able to kind of lead you on these little journeys and then to hear back from everyone is always an extra bonus, you know, to everything. So.
And Facebook is, of course, facebook.com/TheShambhala Center.
Right. Correct. Yeah. And if anyone has any question along the way, if it's concerning, you know, a guided meditation like that, if you just want to share or anything, please don't hesitate to send your questions to the email that's questionsforshusada@theshambhalacenter.org. What are we? We're .org. Sorry about that. Because we love to receive them. And I think that's maybe one of the, that's one of the things we do have to talk about was a question that came in.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. We're going to revisit the question from last week.
All right. So do you want to go ahead and kind of, you want me to reread the question or do you just want to pose some questions coming off of the questions?
I think we could reiterate.
Okay. So again, we had someone ask a question concerning money. This is a person that really, I'm just going to read the very first line because it kind of sums it all up. I suck with money and don't like banks. So there you go. So here is a person who kind of is identified with the role of being bad with money management and has a definite, I won't even say love-hate relationship, a definite kind of hatred for the banking system. Now, a lot of people experience hatred for the banking system. And here I sit with someone who actually works for the banking system, right? Banks aren't all bad. Let's face the facts there. You have to remember, like, I love the people get that hung up on that money is the root of all evil kind of thing, which is ridiculous. Money's just energy, not any different than anything else. It's the stories we've attached to money. Now, is there truth that along the way, certain individuals have collaborated to create a system that we call money that, you know, is truly based in scarcity, based in lack. If you look at the, you know, the Federal Reserve System, to if they're the ones printing the money and not our own treasury, and in order for us to print money, we actually have to pay them interest. So you already owe more than you've created. How do you ever pay that back, right? How is that a system that could be something that can stand the test of time? Obviously it can't. But let's not get, and this is where a lot of people get really stuck, because they see the reality of that, and it's important to see the reality of that, right? So in the awakening process, this is usually one of the first things that happens, right? People will experience, you know, some people out there who talk more about these different levels of reality that are going on. So let's just say that you're, you know, raised a good old red-blooded American and you believe that, you know, in Uncle Sam and apple pie and everything's good. And then all of a sudden you start becoming more, let's say you watch the Zeitgeist movie or something, okay? And now all of a sudden you have your head filled with, oh my gosh, like I had no idea. I remember watching Zeitgeist with someone extremely special to me who had actually in that time was still, I think, still would be considered a quote-unquote born-again Christian. And when that person saw that movie, it completely just flipped this person's reality, because the concept that there could be other individuals throughout time who held the same exact experiences as Yeshua, right, as the Christ, was just completely unfathomable to her, right? but yet you couldn't deny it. It's just there everywhere if you look deep enough into literature from the, you know, across time. And so it's important that we actually allow ourselves to not get defensive immediately when someone questions the things that we are identified with, but to be the observer and to allow ourselves to really look and say, you know, wow, like, is there truth to that? And that's really valid. So in doing that, then yes, we do come into a great understanding that are there, you know, potentially, are there like cabals out there? Is the Illuminati something that's real? You know, are there beings from outside of this densification, right, who are kind of working behind the scenes from an energetic place to keep humanity trapped in a certain, let's say, the lower three chakras, right? And is that real? Well, yeah, it is. But only to the extent that it's real within polarized reality, okay? Outside of polarized reality, none of this is real, period. And I say that because, and everyone always wants to argue, well, how can you say it's not real? We're actually here experiencing it, right? And it's, okay, so I see your point, but you think you're here experiencing it. So when you're in the dream state, you think you're experiencing the dream, and you wake up and you realize that you were just dreaming. And sometimes dreams feel incredibly real, don't they? I mean, you can really feel a person. You can even smell the smells and feel, you know, drink the water and feel it going down your throat. I mean, it feels incredibly real. And then you wake up, right? So I would challenge anyone who wants to stand in that place to say, how do you know that you're not dreaming right now? How do you know that this isn't just a play of consciousness where it has taken on this identity of separation and it is exploring everything it can explore about this concept, right? But it doesn't mean the concept is real. And so we'll go back to the understanding that there is only the one. Call it what you want. You can call it consciousness. You can call it light, energy, God, prime creator, great spirit. It doesn't matter what you call it. If that is singular, even the concept of singular doesn't hold up anymore. Right? Because how can there be singular if there's nothing outside of singular? It doesn't make sense anymore now. Okay. And if that's what we're looking at, you know, if that's that little piece that quantum physics is still struggling to understand, and all the physicists out there who were, you know, determined if they just break an atom apart enough, they're going to find the God particle. You can look forever. It'll get smaller and smaller and smaller to infinity. Just as if we go out into space, it's going to get larger and larger and larger to infinity, because God is all. You'll never get outside of it. Do you understand that? You'll never get outside of it, either going in or going out. There's no ending, because it is all there is. Right? So on a piece of paper, if you drew a black dot, that black dot represents a single thing, but it's within a context of space that is the paper, right? If the dot is expanded out, so there's no paper left, it's just dot, then how can you say it's even a dot, right? It just loses all sense. And that's why words are difficult, because words are polarized. So it's, you know, like all the yogis will always say, like, we can use words to kind of lead you to a place, but it can't bring you to the place, because the place is outside of words. And that's where your divine essence resides, is outside of verbalization. There's no need for it. Why would there be? Okay. So she doesn't like banks. And she struggles with, she's had student loans that have gone into default. And this is probably a story that is relatable to everybody, you know, whether it's a student loan or a credit card or a car loan, falling behind on your rent or your mortgage. I mean, how many people in the world right now financially are really struggling, right? So she's been in the place where, as she says, I see debt as a never-ending cycle, and I don't want to be part of it anymore, all right? And but she recognizes that that's not how the world operates. The world is operating from this money system. So she sees it as something she hates and something that is, you know, ridiculous and doesn't serve the highest good of humanity, but yet can't see a way outside of it. And I think that that's really valid, because here's where the biggest thing is for her. Within it, she's got to work on this from two different levels. And remember, and I always say to you, like, we view things from different levels. And it's the beauty of self-inquiry is that it allows you as the observer to detach from that personal self to a place where now you actually are experiencing more of your multidimensional self. And within that, you experience more of the knowing that actually resides in the Christed self. So from that place, you're going to view the world very differently than you would when you're identified with I'm in debt and, you know, the bill collectors hate me kind of a thing. So we have to, you know, it's like we are here, aren't we? Dream or no dream, you're stuck in it right now. Yeah. So the challenge is to function from your highest levels of understanding here in the world, right? In a world that doesn't function from high levels of understanding. And exactly the opposite, actually. It functions from very kind of primal energies, very polarized. We spoke to that very specifically last week, didn't we? So there are two things. So she would need to look at it from, first of all, I've got to find where I'm identified here, right? So she can see, she already said it right in the beginning, I don't like banks. She's showing us that she judges the banks. And she could go in specifically, look at specific judgments, right? They're evil. The banks are, you know, selfish, they're greedy, you know, whatever. And then she can look at that. And now what she can also do, which would be great, especially with her bill collectors, because she's had to have conversations with them along the way. And she can say, well, how do I believe that they judge me? Now that is a gem. When you, it's very easy to find how you judge others. All right. It's hard for you to find how you really judge yourself. And the easiest way to get there is to actually project out how another person judges you. So in the experience of having, you know, say it's a bill collector and then you have this person who's in debt, she might be able to see, to say, well, I think that they would judge me as lazy. They would judge me as what? Inept. And they would judge me as not good to my word. And all this stuff. And then if she can get to that place, that's usually not too hard to do. And then from that place, what you're actually looking at is that is the inner judge. You're able to project it out on another far more easily than you could just go in and see it running in yourself. Remember, because this is a level that's unconscious to you. So if she gets angry because her concept is that the bill collectors think that she's lazy, and that angers her because she knows how hard she works, right? And they can't see it. Well, here, now we've got it. She's identified there, okay? I hope you can see this. Pelion's nodding at me, so I'm hoping that it's clear to everybody. She's so identified with being a hard worker that she refuses to see where, in fact, she is lazy too. And maybe it's about this. Maybe it is, you know. Maybe it's not, but maybe it is. I promise you, someplace in there, someplace, she's lazy, right? But refuses to accept it. Even if it's brought to her, she refuses to accept it because she's overly identified her persona with a hardworking person. Let's say another thing would be dishonesty, right? So maybe the bill collectors think you're dishonest because maybe you're telling them I don't have the money, and they think that for whatever reason, they've seen your credit reports or something, right? Let's say, and they can see that you've racked up, you know, $5,000 worth of bills at like Best Buy and pick something else, Macy's. So obviously, there's a lot of purchasing going on, right? Is that honest? So if they look at that and they say, well, so why is it that you could pay that but not pay a student loan, right? Would they have a point? Well, of course they would. Why not? Definitely a point. Would that be something that would trigger this person if she felt that she's a very honest person? Oh, you better believe it. Because she can't see that maybe what really does run underneath it is a level of dishonesty that she's not willing to sit in and recognize about herself. And the thing is that because it's held by the unconscious, you, from a conscious place, will you stay in denial about that. And you will repress anything that will come up that maybe could hint at, oh, maybe I am dishonest, right? The ego does not want to be that honest with itself and actually see these things running. Because remember, the ego has convinced itself that there are some things that are good and there are some things that are bad, and I'm going to do everything in my power to maintain the goodness in myself. I have to believe that I'm good, and I can't allow myself to see where I'm bad. So the denial is what actually holds it all in place. It's creating your reality on a daily basis in the world. Okay? The denial holds it in the unconscious where you can't see it. And if you can't see it, you kind of have no power over it, do you? You know, how do you fight an opponent that you can't see? So doing this kind of inquiry, just bringing in how do you believe they judged you, is really amazing, because it gives you insight into your own unconscious mind. And you start to see that you're holding that side too. You have to hold all of it. That's the thing that people have a really hard time with in the beginning. They can't see that, you know, you do hold both sides of everything. Anything you identify yourself with, you're also holding the other side of it. It's just it's in the unconscious. Because you have deemed it bad. Okay? Unless you happen to have something where you're very neutral. And you actually can see yourself as both. You know, that's already been, it's already come to light. So if that's the case, you will find you're not going to have issues in the outside world concerning that, because you're not identified with it, right? So let's use an example, something that's easy to see. Let's say you have a person who is raised in the Bible Belt as a Baptist, and it's a young man, and let's say that this young man is growing up, and he realizes that he has homosexual tendencies, okay? That young man is going to experience huge amounts of guilt about that because of the indoctrination he got as a Baptist that says that that's evil. You know, it's a sin, right? Whereas, and so what's going to happen with this guy? He's going to be reminded of his guilt all the time. He's going to see it everywhere, right? As opposed to someone who, say, grows up in, I don't know, Manhattan, and they live in Greenwich Village, and it's like super accepted to be whatever. And let's say this person doesn't really identify themselves as anything, but if they did, they'd say, I'm probably, you know, bisexual, because I really don't care, right? It doesn't have anything to do with the physical form. It's the essence of the person, right? So that person is not going to, in the outside world, experience stress and guilt and shame around the concept of who do I sleep with. It just doesn't exist for them, right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. I hope that makes sense to all of you too. So anything that you have identified yourself with, I'm kind, I'm honest, I'm a hard worker, I'm a loving mother, I'm a loyal friend, What else?
Good worker.
A good worker, great employee. I'm a true seeker. That's a good one. Right? Any of them. I mean, any of them. If you're holding that, I promise you there's another side that you're holding to that you have thus been blind to. And so your job now is to start looking in the world and seeing where things start to get under your skin. And they can be really subtle, you know. If you took a pad of paper carried around with you all day long, ooh, this is a good homework assignment. Take a pad of paper, carry it with you all day long for a week. And every day, every time something irritates you, even in the slightest little way, put a check mark. At the end of the day, count up how many times you got irritated in that day, right? She'll see the stinky face PLAN's making over there. She's like, ooh, I don't think I wanted to do that one. But what an amazing exercise. Because every time you get irritated, that shows you where you're identified, right? So let's say on a daily basis, you may be getting irritated over 100 times a day. And you didn't even recognize it. I mean, like literally some people will be irritated almost constantly from the time they wake up in the morning until the time they go to bed at night. As if the whole world is out there to get them, right? Truly. And everything, you know, even just something like, something came up, my husband was alluding to, it was someone that he knew that took great pride in his own physical injuries. So if someone broke a leg, let's say, this guy would come back with, oh, you think you broke your leg? You have no idea. Like when I broke my leg, blah, 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 you know, this whole thing. Even that, there's a level of irritation that sat there because he couldn't be outdone by the other guy who shattered his leg. You see what I'm saying? It's right there. Yeah, it's right there. And people, you know, you live in this all the time. And you don't realize how oppressive it is. It's horrendous. You can speak to that, can't you? Yeah.
As far as what part?
All of it.
Because it's all over.
That's right. But just being in that state all the time. Like, when did you recognize how enslaved you were to feeling that constricted and that angry all the time?
Let's see. I would say probably after working through a few processes with you. And I realized, my God, I'm such a horrible negative bitch. Like when you're talking about making a tick sheet of everything. I mean, back then, I probably could have filled up a whole tablet in one day. Everything annoyed me.
Right. Okay, and now if I was to ask you, how many times a day do you think you get annoyed? What would your answer be?
Well, my commute to work. I would say, being honest, probably like a good, and working for a bank, probably I would say maybe a good 30, 50 times a day still.
Still that much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's huge progress from where you started, certainly.
Oh, God, yes. And plus now, I mean, like it doesn't, it's so, now it's just like, you know, if something comes up, it's like, and then it's okay. Like it's gone. Whereas before I would like be seething over it and it would just like fester.
Right. And then you'd have to talk to other people about it and keep it alive. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now that's gone. You recognize it and then it's dropped.
Oh, it's fleeting now.
Right. Right. Yeah. And even, it's very funny because at a certain level, you know, the Christ itself will still witness some of that stuff that'll run, but it doesn't pay attention to it. And that's the difference, right? it doesn't, and even if from a Christed place, someone cuts you off in traffic and you're like, you jerk, right? There's nothing there that really believes it anymore. It's a momentary, it's like it just kind of flies through and it's just done. And then it's like, it's funny the whole time. You can just laugh about it because you just, from that Christed place, you don't take anything here seriously. How could you? Right. Because it's not real. From the level of the Christ, you've seen it. You've seen the man behind the curtain. That's done. Right. And at that point, you know, it's funny. There's a Jason Mraz song that, what's it called? Live High. I love that song. And in it, he says, it's just laughter we're making after all. And I love that line because it's so true. Because at a certain level, everything is just funny, especially when you see how worked up people get over nothing. You know, they're worked up about a piece of themselves that they refuse to recognize. And that's it. And they're convinced that it's that person, or they're convinced that it's that dude on TV, or that it's the weather or whatever. But what they can't see is it's their own psyche that they're really angry at. And then beyond that, it's actually just God. So the bigger story, if we take it back to the primal imprint, is that anytime that you have a reaction to something, or you have that moment of irritation, right? In that moment, it's never about the thing you're irritated at, because that thing you're irritated at is just representative of the light or God. That's all it is. It's ego, lower mind, in direct opposition to God, to its natural state, right? There's higher mind. There is higher mind. Lower mind is trapped in this space of separation. And so it thinks that God, or higher mind even, is its enemy. And that's actually, you know, couldn't be further from the truth. Okay. Lower mind is higher mind. It's just a different degree. All right. It's been pushed way off to the left, but it's all on a sliding scale. Yeah. And that's what's happening as you're doing your work, right? On that sliding scale of mind itself, you're moving, right? You're constantly in flux. And at moments, you actually bring in higher mind knowledge. And then other moments, you're just mired in lower mind, as low as it's going to go. Yeah. But you aren't any one thing all the time when you're doing your work. You know, it's this flux all the time, moving. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. All right, so back to our person with the question, the money problems. So she has that work to do to really look, okay? So she can get in there and she can find out why she's holding so tight to this whole thing. And then from that place, she's going to be able to start to see it clearer. And then from the level of being in the world, now she has an opportunity to function in a proactive kind of way versus a reactive kind of way, right? So what she does now is she's reactive. So if the phone rings and she recognizes that it's a bill collector, she won't answer. And that's her reaction, because she doesn't want the confrontation, right? Or if she actually gets one of them on the phone, maybe she gets really defensive and just, you know, it just never, it can never get anywhere because she's not even open to having conversation. If she can see what's at play, now she has an opportunity to function from a very different place. And she can say, okay, so here's the deal. You know, I did enter into a contract to, because I wanted to go to school, and I did go to school, and so I, you know, my end of that bargain was held up, and they held up their end of the bargain because they did loan me the money and I was able to finish my schooling. And so now what's supposed to happen is this. Now I pay them back. Fair enough. Okay. And now she can see her shortcomings, because maybe what she sees is maybe she held the story that she just didn't have enough money to pay it, and that's why she became delinquent. And then maybe when she gets real with it, she starts looking and goes, wow, like, if I look back, like, 2 months ago, I went out for a party weekend with my girlfriends, and I spent about $200, right? And then she goes, oh, like, that would have paid my student loan. Now, she has an opportunity to see why she did that, right? Is there maybe an underlying sense of entitlement that sits there that says, I should be able to have fun when I want to have fun, so I'm going to use that money for that and to hell with everybody else? Maybe. Maybe that's there. And that's not something that people want to look at. And I will tell you, sense of entitlement is a big one for people. I've seen a lot of people actually get very, very trapped in that, and they absolutely cannot see it. They cannot see it. How, because they feel entitled to things, they can't see how disrespectful it can be to others, and how even hurtful it can be to others because of where they function from. So that one hides very well. So now, because she can look deeper, now she will feel empowered enough to kind of just be real with the whole thing. And then at that point, then she can go, you know what? The right thing to do. What's the right thing to do? And she can look to her conscience, right? Because your conscience is actually divine. And she can get in there and feel it, because it'll be there. And it'll say, call them. Make it right. Like, make it right. And so now she can go, she can make that phone call and hopefully figure out a way to work it out with them. Now, if, and I know, Pelion, you mentioned earlier kind of like, well, what if they won't work with her? That kind of a thing, you know, then what do you do? The biggest part of this whole thing is the intent behind it, right? So her intent is pure. You see what I'm saying? Like, she sees her part in it, and now she's just going to take the step to do the right thing. Now, if at that point, from a very honest place, she, because she's so delinquent, she can't catch up. Well, now we have something that you're going to work with them from a very honest place. So if you can't pay it, you can't pay it. And then if you're going to just default more, then you default more. But not if she defaulted from the space where she was originally in. There's a huge amount of guilt there, right? Because she wasn't willing to see what was really running. And she would feel very shameful about it. However, if she takes the steps she can take to make it right, and at that point, even though she has attempted and really tried to do what she could to make it right, at that point, if the late fees and everything have built up so much that she just can't catch up, well, then she's going to do the best she can, but she's not going to feel guilty anymore. You see what I'm saying? Because there's no reason for that to sit there. She's going to know inside, I'm doing what I can do. And she'll feel fine about that and not have to be polarized anymore over that whole situation. Okay, so that's how, you know, we would be looking at it from the two different places. Is there anything else about that that you feel like I covered that pretty well?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
We got almost a whole hour.
That's a lot of talk about money. Let me share with you a little quote before we cut to our meditation music, because it's beautiful. I put it on our Facebook page. It's a quote from Ramana Maharshi. It's just gorgeous. To preface it, we'll call it, "When a person is self-realized." So hold this tonight. This is good. When a person has realized, a universal life current takes possession of him, and he becomes an instrument in its hands. His own separate will is gone. This is the real self-surrender. This is the highest kundalini, which is the divine cosmic energy. This is the real bhakti, or devotion. This is jnana, or knowledge of the self. And that's such a beautiful quote to end with. As we go into our meditation music tonight, I'm going to ask that we continue our violet flame work. But through this meditation, don't feel like you have to focus anywhere in particular. Just hold it within your own beingness and allow that violet flame to do what it needs to do. Ask that if anything can come up for you internally through an image or a memory that can be cleared at this time, let's ask that it be cleared. And while we're listening to the song, just be aware as that violet flame does its work, and you watch your own discordant energies, if there are still any remaining this evening, that they get transmuted for you. It's been such a pleasure to be with you again tonight. Thank you so much, and we look forward to speaking with you next week.
You are divine.